Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today's guest, the legendary Ralph Nader, has spent the past 70 years advocating and fighting for the people. He recently celebrated his 90th birthday and is busy as ever. He told C-SPAN that he spent his birthday working to advance justice for all people, regardless of political party. Ralph Nader hosts the weekly podcast, The Ralph Nader Radio Hour. He writes a regular column. Last February, he launched a newspaper called Capitol Hill Citizen, whose motto is Democracy Dies in Broad Daylight. Ralph Nader wrote the lead article for the paper called Collectively, Congress is a Weapon of Mass Destruction. We'll ask him what he means about that. Ralph Nader has also written a new book called The Rebellious CEO, 12 Leaders Who Did It Right. He profiles a dozen leaders he's crossed paths with during his 7 decades of activism, CEOs who exceeded his expectations. As you may remember, his best-selling, groundbreaking book, Unsafe at Any Speed, came out in 1965 when he was just 31 years old. Today, Ralph Nader will join us to discuss Gaza. He's done a lot of radio shows about Gaza. He's written many columns about Gaza. We'll talk about Congress, the election, our current state of affairs, and his long body of work. If you would like to join us, if you have a question or comment for Ralph Nader, if you remember all the great work that he did at Public Citizen as a consumer advocate, really raising hell in Washington, D.C., and I mean, he's still doing it at 90. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And because Ralph Nader talks so much about inequality and corporate crime, and he really points the finger at corporations that do not pay their taxes, you might be surprised to learn that he wrote a book praising 12 CEOs. But he says there are people doing things differently, and they deserve attention. He also said that he's not really getting that much media attention for his new book because it's good news, and editors have told him that they're not interested in good news, especially during an election year. So we thought that it was important to bring Ralph Nader on because he is celebrating his 90th birthday and because he does have such a long body of work, and we wanted to learn more about the people that he wrote about, a number of interesting people who actually treat their workers with respect. They are members of unions, and they also understand that you cannot pillage the planet. I mean, this is another problem with so many corporations out there. And he profiles people who say, no, we are not going to be a plunder of the earth. We are going to treat the earth with the care that it deserves. So Ralph Nader is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. At 90, he does not use Zoom, so we're trying to get him on the line, and hopefully he will be there soon. In the meantime, if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments for Ralph Nader, if you'd like to talk about some of the work that he's done over the years that has really stood out for you, what do you remember about Ralph Nader's work? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And again, Ralph Nader will hopefully be on with us soon. We are trying to get him on the line. Just to go over some of the people that he profiled, he's got a chapter on Anita Roddick, the founder of Body Shop. Ralph writes that as part of her work, she really wanted to run a pro-environment, pro-animal rights, pro-human rights company. That's pretty rare to hear a CEO talk about pro-animal rights. She said out loud what makes the big bosses of business cringe, mainly that business, far more than organized religion and government, was the most powerful institution on earth. So he writes about Anita Roddick. He also writes about Ray Anderson, CEO of the Interface Carpet Tile Manufacturer. He uses phrases like extinction, and he's one of the CEOs who said he did not want to be a plunder of the earth. And so that's a really interesting one. And this is one of the CEOs I've never even heard of. So Ralph Nader met Ray Anderson a while back and talked to him about putting, you know, creating a company that actually puts the planet first. I mean, that's just so unusual in today's day and age. We are calling Ralph Nader on his first number again. He does not do Zoom, so we're trying to get him on a landline, and hopefully he will be on with us soon. Ralph Nader just turned 90, and he is out with a new book called The Rebellious CEO. He came out with a brand new newspaper last year called Capitol Hill Citizen. It is in print only because he wants people to actually sit with the paper rather than just scroll from story to story. And their motto is democracy dies in broad daylight. You can find more information about Capitol Hill Citizen at yourcallradio.org. And I think we have Ralph on the line. Hi, Ralph. Welcome to Your Call again. And happy 90th birthday.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ralph. Thanks for all of the great work that you've done over the years. I want to start off by talking with you about Gaza, because I listen to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour every week. You've done so many shows about Gaza. You've written several op-eds about the brutality. And yesterday, Philippe Lazzarini, the Commissioner General of UNRWA, tweeted that Israeli authorities denied his entry to Gaza as famine is imminent. Children are now dying of dehydration and hunger. Ralph, I mean, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, you can't even fathom that over 31,000 Palestinians have been killed with the full backing of the Biden administration.
Oh, this is a huge undercount of fatalities. No tiny enclave with 2.3 million people, defenseless, impoverished to begin with high anemia rates due to the Israeli blockade among children over the years, can take 70,000 bombs and missiles targeted on civilian infrastructure and civilians, and then with the genocidal words of the Israeli Minister of Defense on October 8th, no food, no water, no medicine, no electricity, no fuel, and end up with only 31,000 lives lost. It's already been recognized that tens of thousands of people lie under the rubble. That was printed in the Washington Post recently. So there's a huge undercount. More broadly, this problem...
Oh, Ralph, are you still there? Did we lose Ralph Nader? I think we just lost Ralph Nader. All right, we're going to get him back. Ralph Nader is on a landline. He does not use Zoom, and so we're going to reconnect with Ralph Nader. Ralph was just talking about what is happening in Gaza. He's done many shows on the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. He's also written a number of op-eds about what is happening in Gaza. And as he said, the 31,000 is an undercount. A lot of organizations are saying that when you add in the number of bodies that are under the rubble, the death toll is definitely going to increase. And I mean, to think that children have been left with absolutely no family. We did a show about children who are losing limbs because there is no anesthesia. And Ralph Nader has been talking about this consistently on his show. He actually had a piece called Stop the Undercount of Palestinian Casualties. And I'll just read from this while we reconnect with him. He writes, 2.3 million defenseless Palestinians have been on the receiving end of more than 65,000 bombs and missiles, plus nonstop tank shelling and snipers. The extreme right-wing Netanyahu regime has enforced its declared siege of and its genocidal words, no food, no water, no electricity, no fuel, no medicine. Again, this is Ralph Nader in his recent column. The relentless bombing has destroyed apartment buildings, marketplaces, refugee camps, hospitals, clinics, ambulances, bakeries, schools, mosques, churches, just about everything. In fact, Ralph had this really interesting statistic in one of his pieces, which I have not seen before, but it is right because I confirmed it. Palestinians have one of the highest literacy rates in the world, 97%. I don't know why we're not hearing about more of that. Truthout actually has a piece about how almost all of the colleges and schools have either been obliterated or bombed. And so there's just no way that they can be used again. I mean, to think about Palestinians having a 97% literacy rate and so many people were going to school at all level and now there's no schools. And so that is just something that really needs to be discussed. Ralph Nader in his latest column writes that Israel has uprooted agricultural fields, including thousands of olive trees on one farm, bulldozed cemeteries, bombed civilians fleeing on Israeli orders while obstructing the few trucks carrying humanitarian aid from Egypt. With virtually no healthcare left, no medications, and infectious diseases spreading, especially among infants, children, and the elderly, can anyone believe that the fatalities have just gone over 30,000? With 5,000 babies born every month into the rubble, their mothers wounded and without food, healthcare, medicine, and clean water for any of their children, severe skepticism about the Hamas Health Ministry's official count is warranted. Netanyahu and Hamas, which he helped over the years, have a common interest in lowballing the death, injury, and toll, but for different reasons. Ralph Nader writes, Hamas keeps the figures low to reduce being accused by its own people of not protecting them and not building shelters. Hamas grossly underestimated the savage war crimes by the Israeli military superpower, fully and unconditionally backed by the U.S. military superpower. Ralph Nader writes, the health ministry is intentionally conservative, citing that its death toll came from reports only of named deceased by hospitals and morgues. But as the weeks turned into months, blasted, disabled hospitals and morgues cannot keep up with the bodies or cannot count those slain, laying on roadsides and alleys and beneath building debris. And I'm reading right now from one of Ralph Nader's recent columns called Stop the Undercount of Palestinian Casualties in Gaza. We are trying to reconnect with Ralph Nader, and hopefully that will happen soon so we can get him on the line to talk about what he's been discussing with his guests on his podcast, The Ralph Nader Radio Hour, and then what he's been writing about in his column. Ralph Nader recently turned 90 years old, and he is as busy as ever working on all of these issues, still fighting for the people, trying to bring information to the media. And so if you'd like to ask Ralph Nader a question as soon as we get him back on the line, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Ralph Nader goes on to write that there was a Washington Post piece on March 2nd, and Ishan Tharoor writes, the bulk of Gaza's more than 2 million people face the prospect of famine, a state of affairs that constitutes the fastest decline in a population's nutrition status ever recorded, according to aid workers. Children are starving at the fastest rate the world has ever known. Aid groups have been pointing to Israel restricting the flow of assistance into the territory as a major driver of the crisis. And I'll just add in there that B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights organization, recently did an interview on Democracy Now!, and they have an entire report about what is happening with food. I mean, they say that this is not a remote part of the world. This is about an hour from Tel Aviv. And yet we've got children who are starving at the fastest rate the world has ever known. Ralph Nader goes on to write that Volker Turk, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, said all people in Gaza are at imminent risk of famine. Almost all are drinking salty and contaminated water. Healthcare across the territory is barely functioning. UNICEF, the International Rescue Committee, the Palestinian Red Crescent, and Doctors Without Borders are all relating that the same catastrophic conditions are getting worse fast. Yet, In the article, the Post still stuck with the more than 30,000 people in Gaza have been killed since the ongoing war began. Ralph Nader writes, just like the entire mass media, many governments, even the independent media and critics of the war, would have us accept that between 98 and 99% of Gaza's entire population has survived, albeit the sick, injured, and more Palestinians about to die. This is lethally improbable. So Ralph Nader argues that there's no way that it's just 31,000. It's definitely more than that. Ralph Nader says, in my appraisal, it's 200,000 that have perished by now, and the toll is accelerating by the hour. Ralph Nader has written a number of columns about Gaza. He also hosts the Ralph Nader weekly podcast, and he's done a number of interviews about Gaza. He knows the ins and outs of Washington from the outside, probably better than most people because he's been doing this for so long. He just turned 90, and I'm not sure what happened behind the scenes, but I hear that he's one block away from picking up the phone. So if you'll bear with me for one more minute, I'm sorry you're having to hear me, but I'm reading from Ralph Nader's column, and we'll be with him in just a minute. He knows what goes on in DC, how things work, the power of lobbyists, the power of big money. What is it about the Biden administration? A number of reports say that in public, they're criticizing Netanyahu and what's going on, but in private, they continue to send weapons. So what are your thoughts about what is happening, how the Biden administration has dealt with this? I mean, you've got more and more very mainstream politicians calling for a ceasefire. A number of Jewish Congress members are saying this has to stop. Obviously, the hostages need to be released. That should have happened, on day one. But they say that humanitarian aid needs to get into Gaza and that the bombs need to stop dropping. So what are your thoughts about where Biden is standing on this? What explains this? Everywhere they go, there are protests. You're not hearing about this in the media on a regular basis. I should say major media. But if you look on social media, wherever Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, you name the politician, there are protesters there, and they're mostly led by Jewish and Palestinian groups. A number of Jewish groups are on the front lines of these protests. So what are your thoughts about that and how the administration is handling all of this? I mean, we are watching this happen in real time in front of our very eyes on a daily basis. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And Ralph, do we have you back? Ralph, are you with us? Hello, Ralph, are you there? All right, well, I think we have Ralph, and I think he is walking to the phone or coming. All right, I'm just going to keep reading. I'm really sorry about this. We're going to get Ralph on the line in just a minute. But what questions do you have for Ralph? What are your thoughts about what is happening with the Biden administration? Did you ever think that this would happen for so long? There are also so many critics inside Israel talking about the Netanyahu government and how they've dealt with hostages, long-time people who have negotiated with Hamas are now criticizing the Netanyahu government. I've been actually trying to get this particular man on the show, but he's incredibly busy. And so this is such a crucial issue. What questions do you have for Ralph Nader? We're trying to get him back on the line. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and I believe we have Ralph Nader on the line. Ralph, are you with us?
Yeah, for now. We'll see.
All right. Well, fingers crossed. So, Ralph, let's dive in there again. I was just reading to listeners your recent column, Stop the Undercount of Palestinian Casualties in Gaza. So can you tell us more about the argument you're making here?
Yes. Remember, this is a small area called Gaza. It's the size of Philadelphia geographically. Philadelphia has 1.5 million people in that area. Gaza has 2.3 million, very, very crowded. And after October 7th, the Israelis announced no food, no medicine, no fuel, no electricity, zero for the entire population. And it launched the most modern weapon-equipped, compliments to the U.S. taxpayer and President Biden, attack on the civilian infrastructure and civilians. Nothing was spared. Apartments, homes, schools, mosques, refugee camps, roads, all people fleeing on Israeli orders, being attacked while they are fleeing, hospitals, clinics, ambulances. And then, of course, the secondary consequences. Injuries from shrapnel and weapons couldn't be treated. Sepsis set in. People already sick with diabetes and other ailments, cancer, didn't have any medicine. People who are elderly and disabled, no fire trucks to put out the fires. And so, and then now we have infectious diseases spreading. So you have the UN and the Global Food Program and Doctors Without Borders and all saying this is not a humanitarian crisis about to happen. It is devastating day by day. 5,000 babies are born every month in Gaza. Where? Born into the rubble. No health care. Mothers unable to feed their infants. Dysentery and diarrhea are fatal to little children and infants. So we have this official health ministry of Hamas being the source of the fatality count. And in the first few weeks of the Israeli war, they relied on the names of the deceased given them by hospitals and morgues. Well, they're all in ruins or inoperable. Bodies are piling up. Stray dogs are feeding on them. There's no place to bury them other than mass graves. People are starving. There's already starvation among children. And why is this an undercount? Because Hamas does not want to provide higher estimates, even if they could, because they'd be accused by their own people of not being able to protect them, not having had shelters or other ways to protect them when they knew what the response of the Israeli military was going to be. By the way, this didn't start October 7th. It started in 1948, and David Ben-Gurion, the founder and first prime minister of Israel, admitted on more than one occasion that, to paraphrase him, it was their land and we took it. Early Israeli colonists were not about to respect indigenous Palestinian rights after they've experienced the Holocaust under the Nazi Germany regime. So they knew they were displacing the Palestinians. So the grievance started with the Palestinians losing most of their land, 78% of their land, their water, and now being subjected year after year to nightly raids, demolition of homes, bombs, helicopter gunships, attacks, on and on and on, and unable to respond until the Israeli border security system collapsed for reasons yet to be explained on October 7th and opened the border to the Hamas raid, which was really about the only significant display of violence in any organized sense by the defenseless Palestinians. So we're talking over 400 more times since 1948 of innocent Palestinians being killed and injured compared to innocent Israeli civilians suffering the same fate, at least over 400 times. So what we're seeing here is an indifference in our country, especially Congress, to the other. meaning the deprived Palestinian people. But in my column, I quoted prominent Israeli leaders throughout their history saying that the objective all along was to take over all of Palestine and populate it with Israelis. So it isn't a matter of self-defense. It's a matter of all along the provocations, the military incursions, the colonization in the West Bank. All along, the goal is to drive the Palestinians into the desert, into Jordan, into Egypt, the ones that survived, that is. So that's the larger picture that has to be examined here by all Americans who not only are paying for so much of this, with millions of children being dropped from Medicaid, millions going hungry at night in this country, the cessation of the child tax credit in this country. Why is Congress about to pass, with Senator Schumer and President Biden's support, another $14.1 billion, with a B, dollars, for Israeli weaponry to further slaughter the Palestinians? So the American people have a strong stake here. We are forced into becoming co-belligerents in this genocidal war crimes against the Palestinians that violate one international law after another. For example, if you conquer an area, you are responsible under international law to protect the civilian population. The Israeli military is doing just the opposite. They are further destroying and jeopardizing the civilian population. There's an issue of disproportionality. If you want to attack a military target, you want to get two people, you can't kill 100 or 200 civilians knowing that they were there, not to mention other international law violations and the Geneva Convention. And a lot is going on there. There's a lot of talk about the hostages that Hamas took. I guess there's about 110 left in the tunnels. But there are tens of thousands of Palestinians seized in recent years without charges and imprisoned. They're the big hostage core, the Palestinians, many of them youngsters and women. For example, a youngster throwing a rock at a tank, it bounces off the tank. They arrest the youngster and put them in jail without formal charges, or just arbitrarily seizing Palestinians in the West Bank and putting them in jail in order to control their extended families. That's a process of extortion that dictators have used in other countries as well. So we're dealing here with the prospects of a larger war in the Middle East. It may draw in other countries. Nuclear weapons are stored in Israel. Israel's a nuclear armed force. It doesn't belong to the non-proliferation treaty, but it's well known that they have at least over 100 nuclear bombs ready to be used if necessary. So this is a very dangerous situation in the middle of an election year here in the United States. And what are we asking our members, Jewish Voice for Peace, if not now, other courageous Jewish American efforts in this country? It's a ceasefire, permanent ceasefire. Stop the killing. Let the humanitarian trucks in. Joe Biden wants to build the pier, which is a very inefficient way to get food into Gaza. Well, all he has to do is say to Netanyahu, step aside. We have hundreds of trucks we're funding that are ready to go into Gaza every day, and it's going to happen, and you're not going to stand in the way. Now, President Eisenhower, in 1956, when British, French, and Israeli fighter planes and bombers were bombing Egypt because Egypt had nationalized the Suez Canal, he basically said, stop. Stop what you're doing. England, France, Israel, and they stopped. We've never had a president like President Eisenhower say that to the Israeli regime ever since. In fact, in my column, It is a quote by Ariel Sharon made to a former Prime Minister, Shimon Peres, where he bragged about controlling the U.S. government. You know, don't worry about the U.S. government, he said, the American people. Don't worry about that. We're in control. So this is an untenable situation for a major, if not the major military power in the world that has sent tens of billions of dollars unconditionally to the Israeli regime over the decades to be used to oppress the Palestinian people. And now to bomb at will in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon. So we have an American empire violating all kinds of laws and a regional Israeli empire violating all kinds of laws. And I'm sure Netanyahu is saying to Joe Biden, who are you to talk? Look what you and other presidents have done to Iraq. You killed over a million people by Bush and Cheney. And there's no threat of Iraq to the U.S. So this is what's going on here. And we've got to wake up as a people. It just takes 1% of the people in this country in congressional districts representing growing public opinion for ceasefire and a two-state solution, by the way, which was proposed seriously and repeatedly by the 22 Arab countries of the Arab League starting in 2002, to the Israeli government again and again, and Israeli government just dismissed it, didn't even consider it, because their goal is to control all of Palestine, including the West Bank and Gaza.
Ralph Nader, we have a related question from a listener, so let's go to Greg in Palo Alto.
Hello?
Hi, Greg. Thanks for holding.
Hello. First of all, I just want to tell Mr. Nader.
Hello?
Hold on a second, Greg. Sorry. Ralph, sure. Can you hear us?
Yes, I am. Did you hear me?
Yes, perfect. So, Ralph, we have Greg on the line who'd like to ask you a question. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, first of all, I just want to tell Mr. Nader how much I respect the work that he's done for God knows how many decades on behalf of the American people. I follow the undercount. I went on and did a search because I heard you speak about this on Amy Goodman's show, I think it was, or maybe even on your radio show. I just couldn't find any accurate figure. I don't disagree with you with regard to the undercount, a massive undercount. But if you go, I went pages after pages and just couldn't find anything. Everybody was quoting 30,000. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I don't know how this thing is going to get ended. The international community has failed the people of Palestine, and I just don't know how they're going to get pressure on, especially the United States, to take this thing and stop it. But they were supposed to, Israel was supposed to go back to the International Court of Justice. I think it was after a month. I thought it was 30 days after their decision in January to report to them on how they were implementing the directives of the International Court of Justice. But I haven't heard a word about that, so I'd really appreciate if you got any knowledge about that, commenting on it.
Well, the International Court of Justice, as you know, reported out a plausible case for genocide, which is their practice procedurally. They used the word plausible, and now they're going to deliberate more, take in more evidence, and every day, you know, the Israeli regime is showing the genocidal strategy here. They're not stepping back in the light of the preliminary finding of the court, but they can take a long time to make the decision. And as you know, Israel is not going to obey anything the Court of Justice says. It does affect global opinion. It does affect media coverage. It does affect what the historians write. But this extreme minority coalition that's running the Israeli government is not going to listen to anything other than to their inchoate design to take this as a great opportunity to engage in ethnic cleansing. And we know what that means. So that's the take on the South African case before the International High Court. It is important to point out that 17 Israeli human rights groups put an open letter to Biden in the New York Times You have to pay for it. These are refuseniks, Israeli human rights groups like B'Tselem, courageous groups like Rabbis for Human Rights, calling out Biden to do something about what they call the human catastrophe in Gaza. That was about December 15th or so in the New York Times. And of course, it's been an even greater human tragedy.
Also, just to add to this, Greg, I just found this article from yesterday in Reuters. Israel has asked the International Court of Justice not to issue emergency orders for it to step up humanitarian aid to Gaza to address a looming famine, dismissing South Africa's request to do so as, quote, morally repugnant. So thank you for that call, Greg. If you have a question or a comment for Ralph Nader, today's guest, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Ralph, something else I learned in one of your recent columns that I have not seen in many other places is that Palestinians have one of the highest literacy rates in the world at 97%. And then you'd learn that all 12 universities in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed. Truthout has a piece about how 76% of Gaza schools have been either destroyed or just completely ruined.
Yeah, well, there's a deliberate attempt to destroy Palestinian culture, Palestinian educational institutions, even Palestinian museums. This is well known, and this has been done before by Israel. Remember, Golda Meir, who was the prime minister of Israel, and she was born in the United States, lived in Milwaukee, emigrated to Israel. She said, there's no such thing as a Palestinian people. Who are we going to give the land back to? They don't exist. Those are exact words. So we're dealing here with beyond ethnocentricity, beyond racial arrogance, we're dealing here with annihilation and obliteration. By the way, for your previous caller, Rose, just to talk about the undercount, in The Guardian in December, late December, the chair of the Global Health Department of the University of Edinburgh made this estimate. She said, if the conditions continue as they are now in Gaza, and they have been since December, a 500,000 people will die, mostly children and women, in 2024. 500,000. Well, they're not going to all die at the end of 2024. They're going to be dying every day, every hour.
Well, thanks again for that call, Greg. Today we are speaking with Ralph Nader, who has spent the past 70 years advocating and fighting for the people. He recently celebrated his 90th birthday. He hosts the weekly podcast, the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. He writes a regular column. Last February, he launched a newspaper called Capitol Hill Citizen. The motto is Democracy Dies in Broad Daylight. He's also written a new book called The Rebellious CEO, 12 Leaders Who Did It Right. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's go next to Brad in San Francisco. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the show. Hi, Brad.
People would stop saying Israel is doing this or that, but the right-wing government in control of Israel.
Sorry, Brad. Can you begin your thought again?
My question is very simply this. What I've noticed from my involvement in all this since 1972, advocating and pushing for a two-state solution, is that you've already admitted that Israel does have nuclear weapons. We've already admitted that they have a right-wing government that has a stranglehold around the government and the product of that government, which are nuclear weapons. So if they say to Mr. Biden, you do that and we don't care, because we're religious fanatics, we're going to go to heaven and we're going to live forever, we will destroy the world. So he's playing with cards that we're trying to push one way or another, rather than perhaps trusting this man to deal with the situation in a way that
Thank you for your comment, Brad. Ralph Nader, I'm not sure you could hear Brad, but you know D.C. probably better than anyone. I mean, Joe Biden has been around for a long time. What are your thoughts about how Biden and the administration are dealing with all of this? Ralph Nader, are you still there? Did we lose Ralph again? Ralph, are you still with us? Oh, I think we just lost him again. Well, I am very sorry about that. So Ralph Nader is not on Zoom. He only does landlines, which is completely fine, but I guess we're having some problems with his landline. So maybe we can reconnect with Ralph. I definitely don't want to take calls because, I mean, obviously I'm not going to answer these questions, but I'd like Ralph to answer these questions. So let's try to reconnect with Ralph Nader. Kevin, can we try to do that? Sorry again about these technical issues. I'm not sure what's going on, but Ralph is on a landline and he's having some problems with it. So we've got a lot of calls on the line. We have a number of emails. A lot of people are asking about the upcoming election, about the Democratic Party, what to do to push the Democratic Party and change the establishment. Lots and lots of emails for Ralph Nader. So I really appreciate your emails and calls, and I appreciate your patience and listening to this show as we're trying to deal with these technical issues. We were really happy when we heard that Ralph Nader could come on the show, given that he's done so much great work over the years. He just turned 90, and as you can hear in his voice, he is still, you know, fighting the good fight. I mean, on consumer, well, citizen issues, inequality, corporate power, poverty. He had William Barber on recently, the Poor People's Campaign, talking about the power of poor people and low-income people. And it was interesting, actually, because William Barber told Ralph Nader that poor people actually want to be called that. They ask people. And so Ralph Nader said, all right, media, you've got to cover poverty in the upcoming election. Enough with the horse race. And I think we have Ralph back. Are you back, Ralph?
Yes, here we are.
Okay, here we are. We're doing our best. Here we go. So, Ralph, we're getting a lot of emails about the upcoming election. Oh, I wanted to ask you, sorry. Brad wrote in and a number of people. You've been around Biden for a long time. What are your thoughts about how he is dealing with all of this?
You mean domestically or?
No, I'm sorry, with Israel and Gaza.
Oh, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. One side is delivering deadly weapons unconditionally, violating, by the way, five federal statutes, one of which is called the Leahy Amendment, prohibiting the export of weapons to governments that violate human rights. And on the other side of his mouth, he's saying, oh, please, Netanyahu, reduce the civilian casualties and let the humanitarian trucks in. So what Netanyahu's doing, basically, is saying, welcome to you, Joe Biden, with our weapons, open door and closed door, with few exceptions, to the 500 or 600 humanitarian trucks that need to enter Gaza every day. So he is playing what I call a very duplicitous role, and he's doing all this in the name of the American people, who are now in a co-belligerent situation under international law with the Israeli military regime's war on Gaza. So don't listen to his words, listen to his deeds. His deeds are the pride and joy of Benjamin Netanyahu and his extreme right-wing coalition, which is about as racist and anti-Semitic against the Arabs. There's the other anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic against the Arabs, as any Israeli regime in history, possibly the worst yet. And one reason that 80% of the Israeli people oppose Netanyahu and what would like to see him displaced, 80%, even though the large percent of Israelis support the war because of October 7th.
Ralph, unfortunately, we have just about a minute left. We'd love to have you back to talk about your book. A lot of people are writing in to ask you, what are the most effective ways to instigate change in the Democratic Party establishment, something you've been working on for many years?
First of all, go to winningamerica.net. That's our effort in 2022 to do exactly what that question vectors. Exactly. You'll see 24 civic leaders talking to all these candidates, how they can win progressive elections for the American people with ease, and how the Democratic Party are ignoring these issues, largely update from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, New Deal, relations with workers, consumers, etc. The second is organize Congress watchdog groups with letterheads. You can start with 10 people on each member of Congress. Less than 1% of the American people organized in this way, knowing what they're talking about, representing majority opinion. There's a lot of left-right support for living wage, adequate pensions, good public services, cracking down on corporate crime, a different kind of tax system, etc. And the third is focusing on Congress. There's only 535 of them, Rose. We're millions out there. What are we waiting for? They work for us. The preamble of the Constitution is we the people, not we the Congress, and certainly not we the corporations. Wake up, America. It's less than 1%. Start with the Congress watchdog group, letterhead, and work the internet, focusing on your member of Congress.
Ralph Nader has spent the past 70 years advocating and fighting for the people. He hosts the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, writes a regular column, launched a newspaper called Capitol Hill Citizen, and is out with a brand new book, The Rebellious CEO. He just celebrated his 90th birthday. Ralph, thank you so much for your amazing body of work. And again, happy birthday.
Well, thank you, Rose. And you can get our column free. Go to Nader.org. It comes out every week, and it'll give you strategies to empower you, not just to inform you.
Thank you so much. We'd love to have you back. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.